This is Jeff Blankfort back in the KZYX studios. Welcome you to the February 11th edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that usually comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. Given what has happened since my last program, 3 days short of a month ago, it could well be called America in Wonderland. That's if the damage we have caused was not so widespread and intense, the entire Middle East, North Africa, and Ukraine being for the moment the most prominent examples. I mentioned more than once in the past that it would require a Lewis Carroll or a Jonathan Swift to accurately portray these times, but even they would be challenged by the extent of the hypocrisy that infuses the message from the world's leaders, beginning with our own, and how our media and much of the public in the 21st century still lap them up. It is as if the internet, which provides some course correction, did not exist. Well, today at 20 minutes past the hour, I'm hoping to explore several areas where that problem exists when I speak with longtime Paris-based journalist Diana Johnstone. We'll be talking about France after the massacre at Charlie Hebdo, Ukraine, where a conflict set off last year by U.S.-instigated coup threatens a wider war with Russia, and Greece, where the election last month of an anti-austerity government jeopardizes the future of the Eurozone. That'll be 20 minutes past, so stay tuned. Until then, let's look at some other things that many people have found upsetting. Let's start with something simple, the fuss over NBC news anchor Brian Williams lying about his helicopter having been forced down under fire in Iraq in 2003. This morning, NBC announced that he has been suspended from his post for 6 months, which is the corporate version of kicking the can down the road. In the meantime, those who planned, authorized, and supported the criminal enterprise that Williams was then covering prance around Washington and from one network Sunday news show to another on a regular basis without fear of being called out for their far more serious lies about that war, against which Williams' pathetic effort at self-promotion pales by comparison. That's not to mention the myopia of the soldiers who served in Iraq who have been expressing their contempt for Williams rather than for the government that sent them there. And if you believe the world has not paid dearly for the Americans never having experienced war on our soil or our foreign military occupation, you probably aren't as disgusted as I am over the success of Clint Eastwood's film American Sniper, whose box office sales will soon make it the most popular U.S. war movie ever. A much bigger story than what people are choosing to see in our movie theaters and which has been largely underreported or misreported in the U.S. media is the current clash between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the White House over an invitation extended by House Speaker John Boehner to Netanyahu to address a joint session of Congress on the issue of Iran, March 3rd, the second such invitation in 4 years. Netanyahu's stated goal in speaking to Congress is to bring an end to the negotiations between Iran and the P5 plus one nations being led by Washington. It's Israel against the world. This has created the biggest crisis in relations between the two countries since September 12, 1991, when George Herbert Walker Bush publicly refused then-Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir's demand for $10 billion in loan guarantees. Rather than challenge Congress, which was under Israel's thumb, just as it is today, he took his case to the American people when he realized that AIPAC had enough votes in both houses to override his threatened veto. In a nationally televised press conference, Bush Sr. explained why he was turning down the Israeli request while telling the public how much money each Israeli man, woman, and child was getting in equivalency from American taxpayers. The overwhelming support for Bush's stance in polls taken immediately afterward sent AIPAC and Israel's lackey in Congress running for the shadows where they began laying plans to defeat him in 1992. This year's event will take place while Netanyahu, currently in the midst of his own re-election battle, visits Washington to speak at AIPAC's annual conference, the major event of the Beltway's political season. The AIPAC conference is usually attended by one-half to two-thirds of the members of Congress whose names are read aloud so AIPAC members know to whom to send their checks for 2016. Netanyahu addressed a joint session of Congress in March 2011, again at Boehner's invitation. It came 3 days after the Israeli Prime Minister had dressed down President Obama in a joint press conference as if he was a misbehaving schoolboy. Netanyahu's reward was 29 standing ovations from both houses of Congress that began the moment he stepped into the House chambers. It was one of the most disgraceful moments in Congress's already far from glorious history. And now Netanyahu is readying himself for a repeat performance, one arranged by Israel's U.S. ambassador, American-born former Republican hatchet man Ron Dermer, and the equally loathsome Boehner, without notifying either the White House or the State Department. A clearly angered President Obama quickly announced that neither he or anyone from the executive branch would meet with Netanyahu, given that his appearance in Washington would be 2 weeks before Israel's national elections and might be seen as Washington taking sides, although it is no secret that the administration is hoping for Netanyahu defeat. The atmosphere in Washington has reached the point where on Friday, in what the Jewish Telegraphic Agency described as, quote, a blow to Israel's efforts to contain the controversy, end quote, the office of Vice President Joe Biden, a many times over self-declared Zionist who would ordinarily preside over the Senate and Netanyahu's appearance, announced that he would be traveling out of the country at the time with no destination announced. Somewhere, I like to think, the shade of Karl Marx must be smiling. In a critique of Hegel, written in 1852, he famously wrote that, quote, Hegel remarks somewhere that all great world historic facts and personages appear, so to speak, twice. He forgot to add, said Marx, the first time as tragedy, the second time as farce, end quote. There is no question but that this has become an embarrassing farce both for Netanyahu and the Republican leadership, while forcing members of President Obama's party to make a difficult decision whether or not to attend a speech that is intended to publicly rebuke the president over his negotiations with Iran. What is behind the current dust-up is the mutual obsession of Netanyahu and the Republican leadership with the same objective, preventing the U.S. and members of the U.N. Security Council, plus Germany, from negotiating a deal with Iran that would allow Tehran to maintain a nuclear enrichment program at any level, an arrogant demand from a country that is estimated to have several hundred nuclear weapons that American presidents are forbidden from acknowledging. This joint opposition to Iran didn't begin yesterday or last month or last year. Here's Tom Friedman writing in the New York Times column on November 19, 2013. Never, writes Friedman, have I seen Israel and America's core Arab allies working more in concert to stymie a major foreign policy initiative of a sitting U.S. president, and never have I seen more lawmakers, Democrats and Republicans, more willing to take Israel's side against their own president. I'm certain this comes less from any careful consideration of the facts, said Friedman, and more from a growing tendency by many American lawmakers to do whatever the Israel lobby asked them to do in order to garnish Jewish votes and campaign donations, end quote. That's Tom Friedman of 2013. 2 years earlier, he had taken a remarkable step that only someone with his prestige could get away with. He explained that the 29 standing ovations for Netanyahu as proof that Congress was, quote, bought and paid for by the Israel lobby, end quote, which even Noam Chomsky or Phyllis Bennis will not acknowledge, publicly or privately. A week ago, Friedman wrote that, quote, the decision to cook up an address to Congress, addressed to Congress by Netanyahu, on why the U.S. should get tougher on Iran is churlish, reckless, and for the future of Israeli-American relations quite dangerous, end quote. Later on in that same February 4th column, Friedman asked his readers to, quote, imagine that Israel's Labor Party invited President Obama to address its parliament about why Israel should give negotiations on Iran more time, and it was all worked out with the U.S. ambassador in Tel Aviv behind the back of the Likud Party prime minister. A lot of Israelis, writes Friedman, would see it as an insult to their democratically elected leader. It doesn't only disrespect our president, he writes, it disrespects our system and certain diplomatic boundaries that every foreign leader should respect and usually has. End quote, Tom Friedman, just the other day, February 4th. In Israel, Netanyahu's decision and the subservience of the U.S. Congress to Israel's wish has come under harsher scrutiny. Kemi Shalev, Haaretz's Washington correspondent, noted on Sunday that, quote, a scorched earth is steadily spreading over the very infrastructure of U.S.-Israeli ties. Not only the relations between the two leaders poisoned long ago, but bipartisan support for Israel now diminished, opposition to a nuclear Iran deal with Iran now weakened, Israel's prestige in Congress now tarnished, the stature of the pro-Israel lobby now lessened, the confidence of the American Jewish leadership in Jerusalem's judgment now dwindled, and the trust of many Americans, at least those who don't view Barack Obama as evil incarnate, who can't quite comprehend what makes any Israeli leader thumb his nose at their president with such brazen abandon, end quote. Back in Israel, veteran journalist and former Knesset member Yossi Sarid was not sparing in his criticism, publishing the kind of critique the same day in Haaretz that would never see the light of day in the U.S., and you won't hear it on any other radio program, I assure you. Beware, Republican Jews on the warpath. Beware, Republican Jews on the warpath, said the headline in bold black letters, and beneath it a subhead only slightly smaller read, quote, a campaign of intimidation is underway to stop Democratic lawmakers from skipping Netanyahu's upcoming Congress speech. God save us from our Jews. Now it's no longer a crisis in the relationship that they try to paper over. Now it's no longer just, quote, tensions with the White House, end quote, that they're making every effort to reduce in between meetings, his article began. Now it's an open war with the United States. It's Sheldon Adelson versus Barack Obama, and Israel's caught in the crossfire. After Vice President Joe Biden, Sarid writes, our greatest friend over there, announced an unspecified trip abroad that will prevent him from being in Congress at the fateful hour, Republican Jewish organizations launched a campaign of intimidation against those lawmakers who had already announced their intent to skip the joint session. Their political fate will be bitter. Ambassador to Washington Ron Dermer, in the service of his master, is rallying his troops and launching a combined assault on Capitol Hill. Benjamin Netanyahu is determined to show the president, once and for all, who really rules in Washington, who is the landlord both here and there. That's Yossi Sarid. One Matthew Brooks, Sarid continues, the executive director of the Republican Jewish Coalition, who does the will of its financial backers, explained over the weekend, and here he quotes Brooks, quote, we will commit whatever resources we need to make sure that people are aware of the facts that given the choice to stand with Israel and Prime Minister Netanyahu in opposition to a nuclear Iran, they chose partisan interest and to stand with President Obama, end quote. And then he quotes Mort Klein, president of the Zionist Organization of America, who added, quote, unambiguously, quote, we will, of course, be publicly condemning any Democrats who don't show up for the speech unless they have a doctor's note, end quote. In these very moments, right, Haaretz's Yossi Sarid, the protocols are being rewritten. Rich Jews are writing them in their own handwriting. They, in their wealth, are confirming with their own signatures what anti-Semites used to slander them within days gone by. We, the elders of Zion, Sarid says, pull the strings of Congress, and the congressmen are nothing but marionettes who do our will. If they don't understand our words, they'll understand our threats. And if in the past we ran the show from behind the scenes, now we're doing it openly from center stage. And if you forget our donations, the wellspring will run dry, end quote. Those are the heavy words of veteran Israeli journalist Yossi Sarid, former member of the Israeli Knesset from the Labor Party. Indeed, Netanyahu's planned appearance has caused problems in the ranks of Democrats, whose fealty to Israel has never been questioned and who are aware that Jewish donors are critical in every election cycle. Democratic Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said last Thursday she was, quote, seriously considering going, end quote, and that it was her, quote, intention to go, quote, although it was still her, quote, hope that the event will not take place. There is serious unease, she said. According to yesterday's Washington Post, only 15 Democrats have said they will not attend the joint session, while about 20 have signed a letter led by Minnesota's Keith Ellison, Tennessee's Steve Cohen, and California's Maxine Waters, asking Boehner to delay the speech until after Israel's elections and the talks with Iran are concluded. The names of the letter's signers haven't been released, but our own representative, Jared Huffman, publicly and unequivocally condemned the event. And I quote from a letter from Jared Huffman. I strongly object to Speaker Boehner's unilateral invitation for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to speak to Congress on March 3rd, he wrote. The Speaker's refusal to confer with President Obama or congressional Democrats on this matter is a clear breach of protocol. Moreover, the timing and context of the speech smacks of political opportunism, an attempt to undermine the president in the middle of delicate nuclear negotiations with Iran, while inappropriately projecting political support for Mr. Netanyahu in the middle of Israel's election. I call upon Speaker Boehner and Ambassador Dermer to do the right thing and postpone that speech. It is not clear at the moment, and that's end quote, Jared Huffman. It's not clear at the moment whether Huffman plans to attend either the speech before the joint session of Congress or the AIPAC convention, but you can let him know your thoughts by calling his Washington office at 202-225-5161. 202-225-5161. And what does the American public think about all this? Well, it seems to depend how much they know about Netanyahu. According to a poll commissioned by the Institute for Research Middle East Policy, or IRMEP, whose director Grant Smith has been a frequent guest on this program, a majority of Americans believe Netanyahu should be investigated by the FBI for his involvement in nuclear weapons technology smuggling before being allowed to enter the United States. In 2012, the FBI declassified and released files of its investigation into how 800 nuclear triggers were illegally smuggled from the U.S. to Israel in the mid-'80s, and Netanyahu's name appeared unredacted in those files, which I reported on this program at the time. According to the FBI, the Israeli Ministry of Defense ordered nuclear triggers, or Krytons, encrypted radios, ballistic missile propellants, and other export-prohibited items through a network of front companies. The ringleader, Richard Kelly Smith, alleged that Netanyahu worked at one of the fronts, Heli Trading, owned by a confessed Israeli spy and well-known Hollywood producer Anan Milchan, who was also working for apartheid South Africa at the time, and met with him frequently to execute smuggling operations. When informed of this, 54.9% of the respondents indicated that Netanyahu should be investigated by the FBI before his upcoming visit. Israel officially designated the smuggling operation Operation Pinto. Smythe was captured, prosecuted, and incarcerated in 2002 after years on the run as an international fugitive. The Krytons were believed to be destined for Israel's clandestine nuclear weapons program. Only 25.8% of Americans polled believe Netanyahu should be allowed to freely visit the United States, while 15.9% say he should neither be investigated nor allowed to visit. The IRMEP poll, with a margin of error of plus or minus 2.5%, was taken on January 26th through 28th by Google Consumer Surveys and received 1,507 responses. Well, just in case you might think Israel might be losing its control over Congress, I'm sure you don't know. Last week, 75 senators signed a letter to Secretary of State Kerry accusing the Palestinian Authority of intentionally challenging, quote, Israel's legitimate right to defend its citizens and territory, end quote. They reminded Kerry that the 2015 appropriations bill prohibited funding for the Palestine Authority if it initiated an international criminal court inquiry into alleged Israeli war crimes, such as those committed in Gaza three times in the last 6 years. Perhaps they are afraid that they will be cited, the congressmen, as accessories to Israel's criminal activities because they knowingly and willingly supplied Israel with the weapons that its military used to commit its crimes against humanity.